So we're on our last year on Sefer Devarim. We're talking about the Bracha. I want to wrap up some of our lingering thoughts from Parshat Ha'azinu, since we really only touched upon it for the last 5 minutes of the last class, and then see what we can come up with in terms of giving a meaningful conclusion to Torah Moshe. Parshat Ha'azinu, the way that we framed it last time, is that the final teaching that Moshe Rabbeinu gives to the people in terms of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the theme of Sefer Devarim, our bumper sticker of Sefer Devarim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is a God of love who guides the world with love to a land of love, is to literally say, listen, I'm about to step off the stage of history. HaKadosh Baruch Hu literally says, you're about to die. And the last teaching that he gives to Moshe Rabbeinu to go over to the Jewish people is the Song of Ha'azinu, is the Song of History. To show them that no matter what happens over the course of history, no matter how dark things get, no matter how difficult things get, even though it's a song by Eilat, there is almost a guarantee, mitzad ha-klal, not mitzad ha-prat, but there's almost a guarantee that Klal Yisrael will go off the derech, though notably, and I don't know if I said this out loud to anybody here, I was certainly reflecting on this, notably it doesn't say how many times they will go off the derech, which only to me emphasizes the fact the number of galiot that we go through and how long that galus is and when that galula comes, that's still very much in our hands. But at the very least, in terms of the way that it's framed to Moshe Rabbeinu and Vayelech, and then even in the context of Ha'azinu, that there will be some sort of reality of galut. That because of HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows our nature, as it says that God knows it, and Moshe Rabbeinu then tells the people, as I know your nature, you've always been rebellious, that there will be a reality, mitzad ha-klal of Klal Yisrael, of rebellion, there will be a reality of them being mefer, the britot, of kitavo and nitzavim. And the Song of Ha'azinu is there to testify that that is something which was known in advance, it's something which is going to inevitably happen, and just as inevitable, like the Ramban himself, in what we saw last time, that's including Ramban, in Parshat Ha'azinu, the beautiful Ramban, where he says that even that just as there was an inevitability to these things happening, and just as Parshat Ha'azinu, written thousands of years ago, has perfectly predicted every stage of human history, in the context of Klal Yisrael, but every stage of human history all the way until this day, so too says the Ramban that this means that there is an ultimate, definitive, unquestionable promise on behalf of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There will be a redemption at the end of days. There will be a return of the Jewish people to Eretz Yisrael and a recognition, a revelation of the oneness of God at the end of days. And as the Ramban himself did, internalizing the message of the opening of Parshat Ha'azinu, pasuk which my Rebbe, so many of the Torahs I revolve around, I just want to emphasize the pasuk in source number one. You can utilize your chumashim as well. I'm just going to use the source sheet because, again, my mind is still freshly processing these things and I have it all in front of me. You have them all in front of you as well. From the opening of Parshat Ha'azinu, Zechor Yimot Olam, Binu Shnot Dor Vador, Shalavicha V'yageidcha Zekeinecha V'yomrulach. Zechor Yimot Olam, that there is the necessity, this is the final, my Rebbe puts this, is the final command of Moshe Rabbeinu. The final sivoy of Torah, and therefore the final hora'ah of Torah. The final command of Moshe, the final command of the Torah is Zechor Yimot Olam. That there's a requirement, there's a necessity to remember the days of the world. To contemplate history. Binu shnot dor vador, lahavin, bina. To think about, contemplate, to process every single generation. That since the Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who is guiding the world, and since he guided the world up until now, v'ashacha pratit, and since there is an ultimate destination, there's a necessity that we contemplate, reflect upon, look at the way that God is guiding the world, because it is God himself who is guiding the world. And we're meant to find God in history. We're meant to see how he got us to where we are, and see how where we are, how the role that we play in the context of history, how we are going and taking it forward to its ultimate destination. And in my mind, I don't know if one can make this distinction because my Rebbe says it in both ways. That already from the very pasuk, the very opening pasuk of Chumash, Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim v'et haaretz. What is explicitly, there's something implicit there, but what's explicitly being created in the first pasuk? Bereshit bara Elokim et hashamayim v'et haaretz.
The notion of Hashem.
What?
The notion of Hashem's power.
That's much farther out, very simply.
Shamayim
v'et haaretz meaning?
Physical world.
The physical world. The physical world is what's unfolding. What's being emphasized here? Time. That the Torah opens up with the creation of space and it closes with the creation of time. That the Torah encompasses, that what the emphasis here is that the Torah itself is not just the blueprint. That's Kadosh Baruch Hu, Estakel B'Torah V'Ra'at Ha'olam, the Kadosh Baruch Hu, I quoted that correctly. The Midrash is the Kadosh Baruch Hu, Mabit B'Torah V'Ra'at Ha'olam. The opening Midrash in Medrash Rabbah, in Bereshit, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gazes into the Torah and creates the world. That it means that the Torah is not just the foundation of space. What Moshe Rabbeinu is clarifying here as we travel through history, that the Torah is the foundation of time. It's the source of all the reality of time. And then we're meant to gaze into both space and time and call the Chomer the Torah itself for guidance on both of those. To constantly be learning about the nature of who we are, where we are, what we're supposed to be doing, and where we're headed. As Moshe Rabbeinu is about to walk off the stage of history, as Torah is about to come to a close, there is a re-emphasis here. And you could see it both ways. Because in Bereshit, what does the word Bereshit imply? Mazet Bereshit? In the beginning. So what does that imply?
Nothing.
In terms of what we're talking about here, Bereshit, the beginning of time. There's an implication there of the creation of time. And in Ha'azinu we see, Ha'azinu ha-shamayim va-daber va-tishma aretz imrefi. What was said there that's in Bereshit? Ha'azinu ha-shamayim va-daber va-tishma ha-aretz imrefi. There's shamayim and the aretz in there, meaning the heavens and the earth. The physical world is present in Ha'azinu, and time is present in Bereshit. Both are hinted to one and the other. There seems to be more of an emphasis on space in Bereshit and on time in Ha'azinu, but that the bookends are that the entirety of time and space are comprised within the Torah, held within the Torah, meant to be contemplating those things over the course of history. So the Kadosh Baruch Hu is the one who creates reality, guides reality, is bringing it to its ultimate destination. And therefore, if we take a look in source number two, the final paragraph, the paragraph that follows the conclusion of Ha'azinu, of the song itself, of the poem itself. Source number two, Devarim Perek Lamed Bet Pasuk Mem Dalet. Vayavo Moshe vayidaber et kol divrei hashira hazot bozne ha'am hu v'Hoshe Abinun. Moshe comes and he gives all of this shira into the ears of the nation. With whom? Yoshua, who's inescapable now. What, after Parshat Vayelech, after that transitional moment of the second paragraph of Parshat Vayelech, it's inescapable that the two are now coming together because this is all that transition of leadership. And so he comes with Yoshua. The person who gives over Shirat HaAzinu, the person who HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded to give over Shirat HaAzinu, gives it over with whom and to whom? Yoshua, the one who has to bring it out and enact it in the next stage. Vayichal Moshe ledaber et kol ha-divarim ha'ela kol Yisrael. Again, this concept, Mazeh Vayichal? To finish, to conclude. What is he concluding? Ledaber ha-divarim. Again, both the end of Torah and the end of Devarim here. We consistently have a sense of finality. El kol Yisrael. Vayomer alehem. Simu levavchem lechol advarim asher anochi me'id bachem hayom. Make sure to turn your hearts to, and again, the concept of turning your heart in and of itself is a very sefer devarim concept. Of bringing it into your heart, of making it a part of who you are. Lechol advarim asher anochi me'id bachem hayom. That's a phrase I don't think we see so often. Me'id bachem hayom, that I'm testifying to you today. It's a testimony as opposed to saying to you, telling you, I'm testifying today because that testimony is to remain forever. To make sure that you, again, looking towards the future, that your children keep all this Torah as I leave, as we leave, as we move on to the next stage, to pass it on from generation to generation. Why? Very powerful words. Kilo davar reku mikem. Kiu chayichem. Masa kilo davar reku mikem? Masa reik. It's not empty to you. These words are not empty to you. And look at the way that Chazal frame it. Very harshly, but very profoundly. Rebbe Mana, and there's parallel Midrashim here, some would say it more explicitly than others, but I'd rather a Yerushalmi over Yalkut Shimoni. That the Yerushalmi itself says, Ki lo davareku michem v'im hu reik, if you turn to the Torah, and I would say looking back at Azinu, and you turn to history, you turn to the world, if you turn to reality or the source of reality, especially the Torah, and you see that it's empty, why is it empty? Michem. Or as Yalkut Shimoni opens up a little bit, Miken hu reik. You've imposed your own emptiness onto Torah. You've imposed your own emptiness onto the world. You've imposed your own emptiness onto history. You've imposed your own emptiness onto Hashgachat Hashem. Don't project your emptiness onto Torah. Don't project your emptiness onto the world. Don't project your emptiness on history and Hashgachat Hashem. If you find emptiness, it's not there. The Torah encompasses everything. Shirat HaZinu encompasses all of history, and the Torah holds everything within it. Everything is there. And it can be the source of truly living life in this world. Everything that I've given you in Torah, Moshe, says Moshe Rabbeinu, everything is there, and it will give you life. That's the next part of the Midrash, of the Gemara here. Lama. Because you haven't put into it. If you're again it, if you toil in it, if you toil in history, if you toil in the physical world, if you toil in Torah and understanding what it means, then you'll find all the meaning in the world. Kihu chayichem. That incorrect Sadi Sophie there is mine. I apologize. That's supposed to be a period. Kihu chayichem, which is the next words of the pasuk in Nem Zayin. Ematayu chayichem. When is it Chayakam? When is it your life? B'sha'asha tenigim bo. I'm finishing over, giving over the Torah to Moshe Rabbeinu, and I'm leaving you with this message. Everything is here. There is nothing empty in here. This is infinite. This Torah that I'm giving you is infinite. Spend your whole lives toiling over it. You will find everything within it. It will take you exactly where you need to go. Moshe Rabbeinu is leaving us with his Torah. With the Kadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, but with his Torah. Because it's Torah Moshe. And that's the last teaching of Moshe Rabbeinu. Thus concludes Parshat Ha'azinu. But then we have this next parasha, the parasha of the Zot HaBracha. What's happening in the context of Parshat Zot HaBracha? It's a very odd parasha. Opening pasuk, source number 4, the beginning of Parshat Zot HaBracha. V'zot HaBracha shebirach Moshe ish Elokim et b'nei Yisrael lifnei moto. So what's the content of this parasha? Of whom? Of Moshe. Almost seeming a little bit more Moshe-oriented even than the rest of Sefer Devarim. It's an odd parsha. And there's odd things about parsha. What is unique in terms of, and some of us I think talked about this in Seder 2 days ago. What's unique about Parshat Vezot HaBracha as opposed to every other parsha in the Torah? It ends the Torah, yes. What else? So, we don't know who wrote the last psukim, or rather there's a machloket about who wrote the last psukim.
Well, seemingly, like, it's Moshe's own formulations. Like, there isn't really... Like, people have given brachas in the past, but seemingly, like, this is Moshe's own bracha.
Simply in terms of even when we read it. Okay. What's different in the quality of when it's read?
It's never read on Shabbat.
It's never read on Shabbat. Why is that significant? When was the Torah given? It's not a trick question because it legitimately follows from the last sentence. What? It was given on Shabbat. I meant to put the Gemara on your sheet. The Gemara says that there's a machloket about the date on which the Torah was given. But even assuming that there is a machloket about the date of the giving of the Torah, everybody agrees that whatever that date was, that it was a Shabbat. And somehow there's an implication that just like the Torah was given on Shabbat, every Shabbat we have Kriyat HaTorah in order that we are Ki'ilu, going back to Har Sinai and receiving a chelak of that Torah in the way that it was given on Shabbat. And there are unfortunately ways out. That's exactly why the way that even things are organized. That you have up there the person who, that you have one person reading the Torah and one person who's getting the Aliyah, that there's Ki'ilu, like one person's giving it over, one person's receiving it like a Kadosh Baruch Hu and Moshe standing at Har Sinai. There's many parallels to even the process of Kriyat HaTorah in terms of the relationship to Har Sinai. And the whole thing is always received on Shabbat. The only parsha, the very mysterious parsha, somehow a parsha that stands alone in Vezot HaBracha. It's the only parsha that's not read on Shabbat, seemingly having a different quality. Emphasized by the fact that it seems a little bit more like it's Moshe himself who's giving over what he's giving over this parsha. Not to say obviously it's part of Chamishah Chumshei Torah. Obviously it has nothing to do with the rest of the Torah. But there's at least an implication of a little bit of a different quality. And the blurring of the lines here, because even how it's introduced. Who are these the words of? But who is Moshe? What is Moshe all about? How does the pasuk phrase it? Isha Elokim. That he's somehow, on the one hand, he's got one foot as an Ish, and the one foot as Elokim, which is so much an encapsulation of what Moshe was about, Bechlal. He was always somebody who was just somehow on a whole other plane, but still a person. And so this parsha itself is almost in a somewhat different place. So Moshe comes in what my Rebbe refers to as the postscript of Torah. After Torah has finished, after the last Hora'ah has been given, after the last Tziboy has been given, after Zot HaBracha is over, after Hazinu is over, and the last Tziboy has been given. This almost postscript of Torah, of this giving over of the brachot to the Shvatim. The question is, what is the meaning of Moshe Rabbeinu, in this instance, giving over the brachot to the Shvatim as being a conclusion to what all of Sefer Torah is setting out to produce, or perhaps even how it's bringing Torah forward to its next stage as we go past Torah into the stage of Neviim and Ketuvim. Yeah.
Just a question about like this being Chatan Torah, and like what you brought up about how there's reflections of the first like of Bereishit in Hazin, but also in this. So is there a point to be made about how this is Chatan Torah, and then following that we read Chatan Bereishit, which is like the beginning of everything? If, like, are the two interconnected, or is it just kind of like a...
The two are meant to bring about a reality that Torah is endless, meaning never to think that we've come to the conclusion of anything. Mm-hmm. And so immediately when we conclude...
That
the Torah is all about circles.
Okay.
And not only is the Torah all about circles, but the day on which we read Vezot HaBracha is Simchas Torah, a day which itself is all about circles, is all about cycles. There's a lot to be said there. That it's the chag that's called chag. Lachu chugam means to draw a circle. It's a day of singing and dancing in circles. It's a day where we have a cycle of the Torah itself. There's a lot of circle imagery that goes on in the context of Simchat Torah, because that's what the Torah is about. As my other Rebbe Rav Yoel always likes to say and talks a lot about, the Torah is not square. It can't be square in Torah. The Torah is not square. It's always a circle. There's no corners. There's no dark corners. There's no points that are more distant from others. It's all cyclical and it's all equidistant. It's all one wholeness, one unique wholeness in that way. But that's a conversation for another time. But there's obviously meaning there. Also in the fact, which I didn't want to go in this direction because it takes it a little bit more, again, not in the style of, I'm sure a little more of a Hasidic root. But there are many mefarshim, many hashkafa who talk about that the last word of the Torah is Yisrael, and the first word of the Torah is. And that which unifies the Torah is Lev. That somehow beneath the surface of the text of the Torah, it's the heart of the Torah, it's the heart of the soul of the Torah, that's what unifies it, brings it back together, that's what creates the cycle of the Torah. It's the heart and soul of the Torah that lies beneath the text. But that's... But I wouldn't say that in Shir, because that's very fascinating. Okay. One year I'll get to discuss this here also. Yeah?
I just want to clarify... The reason why I believe the Baruch Hashem Abraham Shav is because Moshe gave it. It was Moshe's words, not Moshe.
No, I'm pointing out, again, some of the things I'll say here I think are more conclusive, some are less conclusive. Because it seems that Zot HaBrachah has a different quality. It's clearly being more given over by Moshe Simi than even the rest of the Devarim. Again, part of Hanushat and Torah, Me'ez Hashem, nobody's arguing those points, but even the fact that it's the only part that's ever done on Shabbos, and it seems to have more of a Moshe quality to it, there's something here that's really different about this part, that's unique about the nature of this part. And I think it's contained in that concept of the Ish Ha'elokim. I think that, as we'll talk about, I think it's the sort of tension or introduction to this balance of Ish and Elokim that Torah is going to be about, which let's open up right now. Let's open up right now. Tov. We're not talking about Hasidut, we can't talk about Kabbalah. Al-Pi Kabbalah, there are three dimensions to reality. I don't know if we talked about this in the past, if not, we'll talk about it now. What are the three dimensions of reality? Two of them we've already touched on today.
Space.
The two of them are really obvious,
space.
Two of the dimensions of reality. Space and time, right? And the way that the Sifrei Kabbalah, going all the way back to Sifrei Yetzirah, one of the most ancient Kabbalistic texts that we have, is Olam, space. Shana is
time,
and Nefesh is the last realm, which is, call it soul in quotation marks. And that was a joke I made.
Does it say Shazah?
What?
What is that for the first time?
Olam, Shana, Nefesh, space, time, and soul, let's call it.
We did this.
We did this in the what's it called? The Sukkot year. The Sukkot year.
Is that Shazah?
Oh,
that
makes
more
sense.
Is that power?
Yeah,
okay. Olam, Shana, and Nefesh are the three realms, the three dimensions of reality. The Maharal, based on the Sefer Yetzirah, which does is almost the code of the Sefer Yetzirah, much of Sefer Yetzirah, to my understanding, is actually coded in this way, is the nature of the breakdown of each of the three dimensions of reality. And the Maharal picks up on this and talks about how when you want to break anything down into its basic component parts, it's comprised of 12 component parts. And that applies to all dimensions of reality. In what way, let's take the easiest one first. In what way is Shana broken down into 12 component parts? That's the months of the year. In what way is Olam, is space, broken down into 12 parts? So think about, what is the most essential, what is the most central, the most core reality of space that we have in the world? You're all in it.
The Milky Way.
Wow, you went farther out, I'm looking to go farther
but
in.
There are 12 planets.
Israel.
Earth.
Right,
I said in Earth.
Israel.
Eretz Israel. And how does Eretz Israel break down? Into 12 parts, but it's on the 12 shvatim. And the Sefer Yitzhar, which is not our topic for now, goes through how the soul, quote-unquote, how the nature of a human being is broken down either into 12 essential evarim. Or on a more metaphysical level, 12 chushim, 12 essential capacities. And the Sefer Yitzhar will line those all up, and there's so many Sefrei Kabbalah and Chassidut that go through understanding how the lining up of these things works in ways that blow open the doors of all three of them, of the human experience, of the months of the year, and of Eretz Yisrael, but are most often talked about in the concept of the cycle of the year, in terms of understanding the unique nature and content of each month, and how each one is so uniquely different from the other one. Its qualities are different in that way. Now, let's take things one step further. Take a look at source number 7.
What about 5 and 6?
5 is, I put 5 up top because it is the it's the end of, meaning right now we're explaining the last paragraph of the Chumash, so that is the last paragraph. We'll keep on referencing it back and forth. And 6, we've been talking about a lot, which is Zifru Tarak Moshe Abdi, is just the direct statement of the fact that it's called Torat Moshe. It's one of the examples in Chamishah in Tanakh, which refers to Torat Moshe, but we'll also come back to that soon. I'm sorry, this one's already in perfect order. Also, things aren't organized by brain in perfect order yet. I'm still working on the bracha. So, source number 7. Ki yotiv davar bedavar, ata omer, v'natata mehodcha elav, ulecha velo kol hodcha. That in Sefer Midbar, it talks about the transfer of leadership on a Bamidbar level from Moshe to Yeshua, where in Bamidbar, Moshe is told he's not going to be able to go into Eretz Yisrael. This is okay, but they're going to need a leader. Who's going to be the leader? And God answers, Yeshua. And that's when Yeshua is at first in the first instance given, or at least told that he will receive leadership. And even there, in that story, it says that that Moshe Rabbeinu gives from his hod, whatever that means, to Yeshua. And the Gemara is emphasizing here, mehodcha alav velo kol hodcha, only a little bit of hod is still going to be a lesser, he's still going to be lesser than Moshe. He has a little bit of that Moshe spark, that Moshe literally gave to him, but it's still less than Moshe. How does that play out? So Zekenim Shebeoto Hador Amru, the Zekenim of that generation said, they made a comparison. Pnei Moshe ke Pnei Chama. Pnei Yeshua ke Pnei Levana. A somewhat well-known comparison, which if you haven't heard it before, now you will have heard it, so another big reference, it will be famous, which is that the face of Moshe was like the face of the
sun.
And the face of Moshe was like the face of the
Yeshua
was like the face of the, what did I say? I said Moshe twice. The face of Yeshua was like the face of the moon. There's somehow a parallel there between the sun and the moon, and Moshe and Yeshua. And the most simple level of what that parallel means is that somehow Moshe Rabbeinu is shining forth with clarity like the sun, and Yehoshua has no light of his own.
He's,
what were you saying?
He reflects
the light of that sun. That Yehoshua is the next stage, which is reflecting the light of the sun. When Torah comes to a close, coming back to source number 6, when Torah comes to a close, it's Torat Moshe. As we said last time, when Moshe comes to an end, Torah comes to an end. And when Torah comes to an end, Moshe comes to an end. The two are inseparable. Which means we're moving from the Chama stage of history, the sun stage of history, to the Levana stage of history, to the moon phase of history. In terms of the cycles of the sun, are there any cycles to the sun? The sun is the repetitive and continuous cycle of time. The sun rises every morning and it sets every evening. It's the constant repetitive cycle of time. Where do things get more dynamic? In the lunar cycle of time. And in fact, when we get to the lunar cycle of time, how many parts does the lunar cycle of time break up into? On a simple level, you all are thinking like MMYers. You're thinking way too deeply scientifically. Yes, 12. There are 12 months in the year. It breaks up into 12 cycles of a rise and a fall. Meaning, when we go from the transition from the sun to the moon, we go from a reality of oneness to a reality of 12.
Doesn't the sun month also break up to 12? Like, we follow the solar calendar, we also have 12 months.
No, we don't. It's imposed on the solar calendar. The Haraya, Mamash Lahavdil, Ha'elef Avdol, Spin Kodesh Lachol. If you look at something like Ramadan, Ramadan floats all over the place. It can end up anywhere in the cycle of the solar calendar. Why? Because they only follow a lunar calendar. The two don't sync up unless you force them to sync up.
Wait, I'm so confused.
Yeah,
I thought I was in a Chumash class, not a science class.
Like, Pesach is Vakavim.
No,
I forget that. Not
part
of
that part.
Why is it not science?
No, that part.
Yeah, it's science, like, from our perspective. But
no, meaning
like, we're talking about cycles. I thought, like, I was thinking.
Meaning, is it scientifically incorrect, or it's just not the depth of science that you were thinking of?
I mean, it's
no, meaning I said I'm in a science class, and she was like, you're not listening.
From our, right, from the human perspective.
Right,
correct.
Saying,
okay, fine,
yeah.
Yes, okay.
Wait,
as long as they're like, there's really 18 months you missed the scientific article that changed the whole nature of the world. Okay, fine. What?
I'm still confused as to what the sun is.
From our, meaning, as Kayla was pointing out, the sun, from our perspective, when we're looking at the nature of the cycles of time.
The sun doesn't change throughout the whole year,
we
just
pull
it out on
the phone. No, the sun doesn't change, period, full stop.
But meaning, like,
the
sun
consistent nature of time, hashkafically, and from our perspective as we look at the solar system, at the heavenly systems, sun is the consistent nature of time. The moon is the part of time that breaks up into parts. It's not consistent, it's dynamic. At the beginning of the month, the moon isn't there. At the 15th of the month, it's seen in its fullness, and then at the end of the month, it goes down to nothing again.
I thought we were talking about months, and I was very confused.
That's a month.
It is a month, but we also broke up the solar into months. I got it.
So my point is the solar year doesn't break down into months.
Right.
We impose that.
Exactly.
We don't use Uriah from Kol. Let's use Uriah from Kodesh. This year is a perfect example of that. What are we doing this year?
Understanding.
We have two Adars. We have Shana Uberet. Why do we have Shana Shana Uberet?
So it matches up. Like,
for the purpose of forcing the lunar calendar to back to align itself with the solar calendar, which it doesn't naturally do.
What happens if we
all
live by a solar calendar?
It would be like Ramadan, it would be all over this.
No.
That would be for the whole of the lunar calendar.
No,
if
we
only
have... If
we only have a solar calendar, we just have summer and winter.
Solar calendar.
We would have the four seasons, but there would be no dynamism in the context of time. There would be very little dynamism in the context of time.
What does that mean? Like, it wouldn't be months?
Nothing about the sun indicates a month.
Days?
Days we have, but days are repetitive. That's why we have the Pasuk in 12 that says...
We just have 365 days.
This lesson from Kohelet. Ein chadash tachat ha-shemesh. Where is there no chidush? In the Shemesh, by the sun. Where do you find chidush then? By the Chodesh.
No, the point is that there is no Chodesh at all because Hashem created everything.
What?
What? Did you learn
that?
Yeah.
What did you say? What did you just say?
I don't even know.
What did you just say?
There's only different ways to
Can
you repeat it?
Ein chadash tachat ha-shemesh. Where is there no chidush in the context of the sun? Where do we then find chidush
in the
context of Chodesh, which is determined by the moon? There's a lot of hashkafa on this. This is, meaning, if we're giving a cycle of the year class, which one day I really, really do hope to give here.
A cycle of the year.
Yeah, going through not the holidays, but the nature of the process of the cycle of the year of time.
Did we do that a little bit,
Rabbi?
No.
There's so much there. No. We haven't. If we did, we did not even. Oh, meaning we talked about how the Torah overlays with this money, but we didn't even talk about the essence of this man. There's so much there.
Wasn't also like the 60.
There's so much
the
there.
Month, the age that like throughout the year, it's like the age.
There's so much there. That's like the introduction to the introduction of that entire series. Yeah, there's so much there. Anyway, Leah's very confused. Why are we talking about this?
Yeah.
Is if we're saying that we're moving from the sun to the moon, from Moshe to Yehoshua, we're moving from the clarity of the oneness of Torah to breaking Torah down into its component parts. If it's going from the sun to the moon, it's going from one part to how many parts?
12.
And in terms of people, or groups of people who are going to reflect those 12 aspects of the Torah, the Shvatim. What's happening as we transition from Moshe to Yehoshua in Zot HaBracha, as we're about to move from Chumash, literally to Sefer Yehoshua? Moshe Rabbeinu is giving over brachot, but it's not just brachot. Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the son, as that phase is about to end, is giving over Torah to the 12 Shvatim. is explaining the essence, the unique essence and identity of the 12 Shvatim, who are each going to bring about a different facet, a different face, a different reflection of the oneness of Torah. We're moving from he who receives Torah clearly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as it says, V'lokam navi od b'Yisrael k'moshe asher yida'o Hashem panim al panim HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe with clarity got the Torah. And he was the only one with that kind of clarity and saw it in its oneness. That's what defines what aspect of Torah? The clear, unquestionable, definitive aspect of Torah. We put it on the board yesterday.
What's the question?
What is the clear, definitive aspect of Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu brings about? Chumash, or therefore?
Torah
Shebichtav. Including Torah Shebichtav. And is beginning to break it down into parts in terms of its interpretation, in terms of its reflection. Is setting the stage for the next phase of history, of the next phase of Torah, which is Torah Sheva'al Peh. Which is reflected differently by each Sheva, which is reflected differently by each Jew. It has to emanate from that source. That's something which they have a problem with in our day and age, which is people assume that if I exist, therefore I can make up Torah, and that's not what Torah is claiming. It means if I exist, it means that I reflect part of that eternal essence of Torah. If I'm reflecting an aspect of that sun, of that pure light of Torah, if I'm that in that way, like Yeshua, like the moon, like the Shvatim, then it's Emes. If I'm giving a reflection of that pure light, if I'm making something up, it's pure darkness. Those are not the same thing. Just because I think it doesn't mean it's true. If I'm reflecting my unique aspect of Torah, then it's truth. And Moshe Rabbeinu is perhaps setting up the paradigm here for moving from Torah Shebichtav as the sun phase of history ends and Yehoshua rises, it's moving into the reality of the moon and setting up the paradigm for the multiplicity, the multiple interpretations, as long as they're MS interpretations, the multiple interpretations of Torah Shebaal Peh. Yeah.
It's not like Torah Shebaal Peh is ending,
but
Torah Shebaal Peh is starting now. There's a whole lot of Torah Shebaal Peh. Like,
the core, and I would say on the flip side, we assume that Moshe Rabbeinu got most of Torah Sheva'al Peh also when he was at Har Sinai. So he also does hold Torah Sheva'al Peh. But in terms of Chumash, these five books being Kilu, the paradigm Torah Shebichtav, they weren't received through Merkin Nivuah. They were received, this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us from beginning to end. It has its totally unique status. It's totally in its own unique place. Just like Moshe Rabbeinu as a Navi was in a totally unique place that HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to Panim El Panim, he's the whole unique person. There's nobody like Moshe. It's one of the 13 principles of faith of the Rambam. There is nobody and there will be nobody like Moshe Rabbeinu. L'kam Yisrael k'Moshe Od. It stands on its own. Yes, there is more of Torah Shebichtav and Neviim in Ketuvim. And yes, Moshe Rabbeinu had Torah Shebaal Peh. But we're about to move into, as we've been talking about, the application of Torah. Thinking about, now what do I do with it when it comes into these cases, which are all new? How do I apply it? What do I do with it? So I would claim that, and the Sifrei Hashkafa for sure talk about how Yehoshua is the beginning of the Torah Sheva'al Peh process, even though it's still part of Tanakh. That I'm on firm ground on. All of the Mefarshim jump at the beginning of the deeper Mefarshim. Their whole introductions to Sefer Yehoshua are about how Sefer Yehoshua is the essence of Torah Sheva'al Peh. Moving from Moshe to who he gave it over to Baal Peh, which is Yehoshua, how to interpret it and apply it. You're not wrong, but it's a different layer, a different way of thinking about it. Shalom.
לא רוצה שיודעים מה היה שיעור נגמר.
אה, אוקיי.
The clock fell off. It's a new one.
It fell off and shattered.
That was part of
an issue. Oh, that's a good sign.
That's
saying
there
might be. Yeah.
There still might be a little
bit.
Yeah. Darba lecha.
It's not that.
Tuvia! Okay. Now, in terms of it breaking up into those segments, and in terms of transitioning to a new phase, what Moshe Rabbeinu is preparing us for, again, I think that comes back to that phrase of that Ish HaElokim. I think it might be emanating from there, that again, this is the parsha where HaKadosh Baruch Hu was still speaking because he was always speaking through Moshe. But Moshe was still an Ish. And this sort of being that parsha which has one foot on each side, is literally being on the border of the end of Chumash and the beginning of the Yehoshua stage of history. That the Isha Elohim is giving over these brachot, defining their essence. and what's going to carry their own unique reflection of Torah, how they are meant to process Torah, they're meant to reflect Torah, they're meant to internalize Torah, they're meant to share Torah. They're meant to bring out the Torah Shabbat aspect. So when I was sitting there at 11:16 thinking I should probably go down and start Shir, unsurprisingly, Meira and Hannah were still in my office talking to me about what they were thinking about from Seder time. And while they were talking to me and I was pretending to pay attention to what they were talking about, I was thinking about something totally different. Totally different. They hinted to it, but my mind sort of a light bulb went off, and this is literally less than an hour old, but I think that this is true, and it's something which I've heard answers to this question. I've heard answers to this question, but they've never satisfied me. Something about this just rings true. I definitely offer for you to challenge me on it, but it rings true. Which is, I think that looks into the very concluding pasuk of Chumash perfectly. And a very odd Rashi who explains that ending pasuk of Chumash. And there, again, I've heard many explanations of this, but it never resonated with me like it did in that moment. It ends off talking about the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And it says... Oh, before we go on to that, we'll get to that in one second. Sorry, I skipped to source number 8. Keeping with you, Leah, to make sure they cover all of our sources. Which was the Gemara that we kept on referencing, which was... Who wrote the last Pesukim of the Torah? To me, again, each time we get... Literally, every time we take one step closer to the end of Devarim, I just genuinely feel like every time we take one step closer, we're getting one step more into the murky line between Torah Shebiktav, Torah Shebaalpeh, the Torah of Moshe versus the Yeshua stage. To the point where, and I think that perhaps that's even with the depth of what this Gemara is bringing out. Who wrote the last Pesukim of the Torah?
Moshe
or Yeshua. It's a machloket. Meaning there's two... To me, there's...
Did you say Hashem wrote it?
Moshe wrote it in the law.
Let's read the Gemara inside so that way there's no confusion. Take a look inside in source number 8. Shmona Psukim Shabbatara Yoshua Katvan. The first opinion says that Moshe, that Yoshua wrote the last Psukim of the Torah, the underline. Efshar Moshe Chai Vekatav Ve'emat Sham Moshe. Is it possible that Moshe wrote and Moshe died? That would seemingly be impossible because once he's dead, he shouldn't be able to write anymore. Ela Ad Kan Katav Moshe. Until then, wrote Moshe. Mikam Ve'ela Katav Yoshua.
But that's very dangerous to say.
That's why you have to say Chazal said it. Meaning, if we didn't have Chazal, I definitely wouldn't say that.
Why is it dangerous?
Because if you open up the idea that someone else might have written the Torah, then it gives way to other people saying, well, maybe other people wrote other things in Torah too.
Correct. It is a very dangerous thing. And again, it's one of the Chazal can say it. I wouldn't say it. I wouldn't say, I think. Yish Chazal. Now again, and we're saying that it's an exceptional circumstance that Moshe was already God and Yeshua was already writing it there. We'll come back to that in a second. And the other opinion is, one second, let's just finish reading the other opinion. The other opinion is, no, the meaning following in Dina's footsteps, saying, Yefshar. Torat Moshe is Torat Moshe. You can't say such a thing. Ela ad kan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Moshe Omer V'Kotev. Until this point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe, and then Moshe would say it, and then write it down. Mikam Va'elach HaKadosh Baruch Hu Omer Moshe Kotev B'dima. Moshe wouldn't say it because it didn't happen. He wasn't going to say something that didn't happen yet. That wasn't his place. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu told him, and Moshe Rabbeinu wrote those last 8 psukim in the Torah, and Moshe wrote them, and there's actually many interpretations of the word what B'dema means, but the most simple and classic interpretation is that he wrote it with tears as he finished writing Torah and finished the conclusion of his own life. What to me is very beautiful about the tension here, even in these psukim, is who is the tension between?
Moshe
and Yeshua. We're literally down to these eight last psukim. Where are we even holding at this point? We've moved on in Vezot HaBracha to... Let's start with Vayelech. In Vayelech, who are we talking about? Moshe and Yeshua both standing for HaKadosh Baruch Hu with a vision of leadership. Hazinu, that those last psukim that we read, Vayavo Moshe v'deber al divrei shir azot bozne ha'am hu v'hoshea binu. Now they're giving it over together. Then Hazinu, we have Moshe Isha Elokim, this balance of the Isha is also Elokim, this Isha Elokim, to finally we get to the last psukim, and we're literally in a reality of... We don't even know. Are we Moshe Yeshua? Moshe Yeshua is not clear. It could only be one of those two, Dina. It could only be one of those two as we stand on the border of Sefer Yeshua. But as we stand on the border there, it's not even clear where are we holding anymore. And what's beautiful about it, what does that produce in our Gemara?
Oh my God, are you okay?
Good.
Yeah, I didn't touch it.
I didn't touch it. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm okay.
You okay?
I was so scared that was going to happen.
And then literally happened.
Last time
you
laid
it
on the chair.
I mean, if you get up now and get him, you might step on glass. If you sit in the middle of the year and you get up later, you also might step on glass. So just don't move now.
No, it's on the point. It's that so
that was pretty
clear. There's no more classes. It's Wednesday. It's all good. It'll be fine.
It's not.
What?
There's something here. There's yoga, isn't
there? Oh, no.
Give me 10 more minutes. Let's finish the last year together, and then we'll get to you to start. What? Once he walks in and starts cleaning and whatever, there's going to be no focus in the last class of the year, of the semester. It's not going to happen. Are you okay sitting there with glass around you?
I'm great, yeah.
Excellent. Tori's very delicate.
That's my roommate.
Okay. Moshe Yeshua, that we're not even sure who wrote it. This Gemara, what is this? What is happening in this Gemara? What is there in this Gemara?
It's tension.
Tension or a? A machloket. Which is, where does machloket exist?
In Toshba.
I think you meant Torah Shabbat.
Yeah.
Okay. In Torah Shabbat.
Is that not the... It is.
I didn't go to work for high school. Whatever, I don't know.
Oh, they don't teach that. It should be Toshba.
Toshba?
Torah Shabbat.
It's like TSBT.
Have we gone to an emoji yet? Or is that like the next step? Okay. Anyway, there's a machloket happening here. There's a machloket happening here. In the Gemara about the last eight psukim, meaning what does the machloket reflective of? It's reflective of Torah Shabbat Peh. Meaning the last eight psukim are already literally bringing about a reality of Torah Shabbat Peh in producing a machloket. To me, it's very beautiful that what's happening here is we stand on the borders, we're literally moving step by step, one step further, one step further, one step further into the reality of Torah Shabbat Peh. The last moments of Torah are right before we reach Torah Shabbat Peh. So much so, now onto that last pasuk. The last pasuk of the Torah says, source number 5, Pasuk Yibet. Ulechol ha'yad ha'chazaka, talking about Moshe Rabbeinu, ulechol ha'yad ha'chazaka, ulechol ha'mara ha'gadol asher asa Moshe le'enei kol Yisrael. That Moshe before all of Klal Yisrael. First of all, obviously emphasizing that all of this happened before whom? Before B'nai Yisrael, meaning all of this happened before Klal Yisrael. As we're putting an endpoint here, everything that happened in this Torah happened from Moshe to B'nai Yisrael, and this is the end of that process of the transmission of Torah to Moshe to B'nai Yisrael. But how does Rashi understand Le'enei Kol Yisrael? Says Rashi, source number 9. What was the great thing that we're referencing that Moshe Rabbeinu did in this last clause, this last phrase of all of Torah? Shenisa'o libo lishpor haluchot le'eneihem. That Moshe saw fit to break the luchot during Chet Ha'egel in front of them.
Now,
what? That Moshe Rabbeinu found within himself in his heart, the perspective, the idea to break the luchot in front of their eyes. Shne'emar ve'eshbireim le'enichem. The schema da'at HaKadosh Baruch Hu le'da'ato, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu agreed with Moshe Rabbeinu. Shne'emar asher shibarta yashar kolachash shibarta yashakolach, that you broke the luchot. It's the weirdest possible conclusion to Chumash.
Moshe,
I'm agreeing with you. You're asking a question on me. I'm agreeing with your question on Rashi.
Also, why does Moshe need a shkoyach from Hashem?
Right. So pause for a second here. This whole Rashi is wild. And again, this is something which we all need to struggle with, because we all should know Rashi, and this is the final Rashi of Chumash. And again, I've heard shiurim on this, and none of them I found particularly compelling. Which is that. As we list all of the great things that Moshe did after he dies, in the last two psukim, we talk about the greatness and the amazingness of Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not clear what exactly it's referring to, and Rashi, as the Pashtad, is going to break down what each of those clauses is referring to, and what was the last thing that we focus on in terms of the greatness of Moshe, the uniqueness of Moshe, the amazing nature of Moshe Rabbeinu? That he broke the luchot of his own volition at Chet Ha'egel. We want to remember Chet Ha'egel? We want to remember the breaking of the luchot? We care that HaKadosh Baruch Hu said Yisher Koach to Moshe Rabbeinu for doing something which caused tremendous difficulties over the course of history? So I would claim that this fits in with everything that we've been saying. There are many different Chazal. I think there are many different Chazal. It might be one, but I think there's many. But Chazal discussed the fact that the distinction, and the Balei Hashkafa go wild over this. What's the distinction between the reality of the first Luchot and the reality of the second Luchot? The reality of the first Luchot was that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to give them over to us. There was going to be no reality of Shechecha. There was going to be no reality of forgetfulness. But the Luchot are broken. That reality is broken. And the reality of the second Luchot is a reality where things are not going to be as simple. We've lowered ourselves, we put ourselves on a lower level. There's going to have to be work to understand the Torah and work to retain the Torah, and we're going to forget aspects of the Torah to go back and do chazara on Torah. What's the last chord of Chumash, according to Rashi? Is a recognition of the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu, that he gave us the capacity for Torah Sheva'al Peh. That's what it is. If Torah was clear, if there was no forgetfulness, there doesn't need to be a necessity of the back and forth in the development of Torah Sheva'al Peh. It all is what it is. When Moshe Rabbeinu breaks those luchot, he gives rise to the reality of Torah Sheva'al Peh. And even though he's Moshe Rabbeinu, and even though he's the Torah Shebichtav individual, on whose authority did he break the luchot?
His own.
Nope. On whose authority?
His own.
On his own authority. He was Doresh that moment. And he saw in that moment, Shenisa'a libo. Gishpur didn't tell him to. Shenisa'a libo lishpur ha-luchot. He saw it fit to break the luchot. He was Doresh that was what should happen in that moment. And how do we know that such a reality is a positive thing? Who says we're supposed to be Doris Torah? Who says we can make a call like that to break the luchot? HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the luchot. Eiza chutzpah. Eiza kfira. Where does Moshe Rabbeinu get it on his own authority to break the luchot?
From Hashem.
He doesn't get it from Hashem.
Well, it's not authority.
But what does HaKadosh Baruch Hu then go and tell him with a final line of Rashi to end off Torah Shebichtav and turn into the next stage? Yashar kochcha sheshibarta. Two things. One is Yashar kochcha that gave rise to reality of Torah Sheva'al Peh that we're about to walk into. And what validates the reality of Torah Sheva'al Peh? Yashar kochcha that you took the initiative to apply Torah in Mitzara Emes. You can't say whatever you want, but that you took of your own authority based on your understanding of Torah to apply it in a way that I didn't even tell you to. What you did was the Emes Me'ez Hashem, and the Yashar Kochah shows that it was within a reality of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants, and yet it came from the human side. How is that possible? Because that's what Torah Sheva'al Peh is all about. And so the last chord of Torah Shebichtav is, even in the most staggering of ways, even in the most unbelievable ways, even in the craziest of ways, even when it seems like, how could you do such a thing? The answer is no, we're meant to take this Torah, which is now ending in this moment, to take it forward, to be Doreshit, to not be afraid of what we find, as long as we're sure that it's within Ratzon Hashem, that He turns to us when we find what we find inside of that, and know that He will look at us and say, Yashar Kochacha. Yashar Kochacha Sheshibarta, Yashar Kochacha, that you broke down a new element of Torah, that you broke down a new reality of Torah, that you brought forth a new aspect of Torah. Yashar Kochacha Sheshibarta. I suspect that's the conclusion of what's happening here in Mezot HaBracha. It's an entire parsha that's revolving around Moshe Rabbeinu validating the necessity of the next stage of history, which is the breaking down of Torah Moshe into Torah Sheva'al Peh, into its more defined, more broken down parts, into a reality of Torah Sheva'al Peh, and the requirements of all people for all history to take that Torah, to work with that Torah, Mitzara Emes, in the ways that Moshe Rabbeinu himself defines, defining how each Shevet is supposed to relate to the Torah. But for each one of us to find that reality of how we relate to Torah, and to bring that forth in a reality of Torah Sheva'al Peh. I want to give us all a bracha that, having completed Sefer Devarim together, and an overview of Sefer Devarim, no way we're going to think that we actually saw all of Sefer Devarim, but an overview of Sefer Devarim together, that we should all be able to take those messages of seeing Torah for what it is, seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu as a God of Tov, a God of the world of Tov, to a land of Tov, internalizing those messages and internalizing the application of Torah as it was meant to be in Eretz Yisrael, and recognizing that we are the ones meant to apply it and taking Torah all the way through to its conclusion, which is for us to take those messages and apply them in unique and astounding ways, as Moshe charged us with in his last words, in the last words of the Torah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu charged us with in the last words of the Torah, which is that we're meant to take the Torah, to apply it, to bring forth new layers of it, as each one of us uniquely has inside of us, to bring out new layers and new aspects of Torah, Mitzvah Torah Sheva'al Peh. Yashar Kol Chachem.